America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
It's the Growler with BD and Jay. Here to analyze for you today. From Growler Bed to Jay's Got Stats. We hope you enjoy this episode of the Growler Podcast.
Oh, yeah. Still good, Jay. Even in episode two, it's just as good as it was in episode one.
I need to get the MP3 of that so I can put it on my playlist and just listen to it even when we're not doing the show.
We do. Dave Ninemitz on Monday talked about how he's not a peaches and herb guy because there were so many different peaches. There were seven different peaches with herb.
I had no idea. I don't even know another song other than Reunited by them.
No, nor should you.
Yeah.
Nor should you. There needs to be like a hard rock. Could we get a Foo Fighters version of that song? I mean, they did a bunch of the disco stuff. They do disco stuff. Yeah. Maybe we could get a Foo Fighters cover of that we could throw in at the top instead.
Or even harder with Slipknot or something like that.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Foo Fighters isn't intense enough. You're right. Let's make sure we get some death metal feel on that. All right. Episode two, our first regular episode. We did kind of the pre episode last week just to kind of set everything up for the launch. Thanks to everybody that responded with hilarious memes and thoughts and all kinds of stuff about Jay and I having the podcast back together. That was fun. We'll go through some of our favorites later on in the RV section, but there was a bunch of good ones, Jay.
Yeah, there were, and it was fun to see. It was I expected there to be a reaction, but I didn't expect it to be that overwhelming. So it's good to know that we resonated with all the listeners out there.
Yeah, and what I like the most is that proof that the internet is always going to be the same. Like I love it that, you know, we were such a high, like there was like at least to our face 90% of people very happy. I love the people who are like, whatever, pass. Like I love, it's like the internet is just so undefeated of like, yeah, whatever, you guys suck. I mean, I need those people in my life. That haters, I see you, right? I love it. But thanks to everybody that had nice things to say, because it's a lot of fun for us to be back doing this again. And now here's the cool thing, and that is you set up the template for these three shows and for us being back together. And now the news starts hitting and everything falls right into it, and it's really fun. Because the news is happening now. We're on it. Free agency is next week. And we've got a lot happening right now. Cuts are kind of happening. And there's a lot to look at on what the Bengals are going to do. You know, this time next week, a lot is going to happen. So we're going to get into that. We got some news to talk about. We're going to play a little game to, you know, a little competition. Never hurt nobody to see. Jay and I are going to try to be as realistic and logical as we can and see who can predict the most Bengals external free agent signings correctly. I think we'll institute a point system. Mo and I did a draft a little bit, but it was more of an unrealistic, let's kind of like talk about the tiers. What would you do stuff? Jay and I are here to tell you what's going to happen. We're here to pour some cold water on your hopes and dreams.
It's such a crap. Maybe that should be our growler bet, is how many do we actually get right? I wonder how many people would guess zero, because it is such a crapshoot. And, you know, you it could be the Bengals' number one target, and you know how they operate. They put a value on a guy, and if another team goes higher, they're not going to get in a bidding war, and they're going to tap out and go a different direction. So it is really hard, but I've got some names that I think are solid bets to join this team.
If you are watching on YouTube, thank you. Appreciate it. Hit all the buttons and subscribe stuff. Give us some good reviews. We're everywhere that you listen. Apple, Spotify, iHeart, weird stuff. I don't know where you listen to your podcast, but it's all there. So make sure you're, you know, hitting the button to subscribe to the podcast and getting all of our shows sent to you. Cause they're coming to you again. Growler 3 days a week. You balds don't lie on Monday. Me and Jay every Wednesday, and then Hoday Light with myself and Mark Chalifoux on Fridays, kicking off your Fridays with a little bit of fun. So make sure you're getting all of that. We've got a couple of stories up. Jay, you have a free agents kind of outlook story up on Pro Football Network. I hope people have checked that out. The thing about these, and I have one up as well, that's kind of really looking historically at the recent trend of how the Bengals have approached free agency and there's some interesting stuff in there, but yeah, I love about anytime any of us do one of these is just the reaction of people who are just, man, that's just not what I want. It's not what I want. And I'm not happy about it. Free agent season in a nutshell.
A lot of vomiting emojis coming from reaction my piece.
You know what, in here, before we get into all of this, I want one disclaimer. And that is, free agency's wild. We learned this last year. You never quite know what's going to happen. Surprises certainly can happen. The point of all of this is, I think we can have a feel for their plans A and B. That doesn't mean they won't end up at C, D, or E and do something to surprise some people. There's room for creativity, obviously, with where they're at this year and some of the setup of it, and there's room for a lot of different paths for it to go. So that's a disclaimer before we start getting into some of the logic of where we kind of have heard and can view that things stand with the Bengals approach to next week. Let's start off with some news here. And news means Bengals former tight ends are all available. No word on Matt Schoble, Jermaine Gresham. Tyler Eifert, I think, is still fishing somewhere in Florida and wanting you to bet through his promo codes. But CJ Uzomah and Hayden Hurst are available after the Jets let CJ go and Hayden Hurst was let go by the Panthers after a couple of not so super second acts for them in their next destinations.
Yeah. And then the immediate questions that come, you know, will they be reunited? Will either of those guys come back? And it doesn't happen a lot. With Bengals, other teams sometimes will let a guy go and then bring him back. You don't see, I remember Michael Johnson, that weird situation where he signed the big deal with Tampa. They cut him a year later. The Bengals brought him back. Margus Hunt left and came back. Samaje got claimed on waivers and came back, but you just don't see it a lot. And I mean, CJ's 31. He was awesome here as a culture guy. But I don't see them coming back. I think Hayden would be a better fit, but the injury he had a really bad concussion last year. And, you know, I believe he's 30. So he's up there as well. I think he would be the better fit, the more likely guy to return. But I would put it maybe, I don't know, 33% at best that either one of those guys would be back here.
Yeah, so CJ doesn't make any sense at this point. It's age, injury, all of that. I mean, I don't think, outside of the obvious of rapport with Burrow, I don't think he has a lot of other boxes checked, and that's not going to resonate. Hayden's very different. I mean, I know last year, just in knowing the Carolina situation pretty well, I mean, he hated it. I mean, it was not going well. He was barely playing. He just didn't fit with whatever was happening. I mean, the place was a total mess. He dealt with injuries and concussion stuff. And I think all the while was sitting there thinking, why did I leave Cincinnati? And I don't think that's a secret to anyone, that Hayden would love to come back to Cincinnati. And I think the Bengals have interest because, I mean, I don't think he's that different of a player than he was in 2022 outside of what you said. I mean, you got to get a handle on what happened with the concussions and the amnesia stuff, all that stuff that was reported. You can go read about all that that's out there on him. But if you're comfortable with that, you know, you get the rapport with Burrow, you get big energy Hayden Hurst with a chip on his shoulder guy, you get him, you get change of scenery Hayden Hurst again,
yeah. Right?
Who's going to be so happy to be back. It's going to be like, you're going to get that same thing that you got when he showed up with a point to prove here a couple of years ago. And that rapport stuff matters. I mean, they're fresh off the Irv Smith experience. And I think you're getting a guy who would not be expensive. You're going to get him back just like he was a couple of years ago, probably. I don't think you're going to have to pay a lot for Hayden Hurst. I don't think he's been heavy demand. There's a lot of tight ends out there. For that fact, you could see it work. Now, whether it goes that way, you know, you don't know. Like I said, there are a lot of tight ends out there. But I think they're open to it. But there's a few things that they've got to get a handle on in terms of money and health before it would end up there.
Yeah, I mean, he got $13 million guaranteed from Carolina, so he can come back at one of those 1 year prove it again, and he would give them what they don't have. They don't have any tight ends right now, but the tight ends they had on the roster last year were all, you know, kind of one trick ponies where they do one thing well. He blocks really well, but he also can be a weapon. Was a weapon in the passing game, and I don't know that they need. They would love to have it. Not necessarily pay for it, invest in it, but a big name, a big time tight end. But that's not what this offense really needs. You need just a solid guy that can make the plays when they're there, take advantage of all the attention going to Chase and Higgins. I think he would be a good fit from that standpoint. I just, head injuries are weird, and it's a big risk.
Yeah. The other side of the tight end conversation is Sample, Hudson. I think it's both. Clear they would love to have those back. What is that market? I mean, both of those guys had nice seasons, and teams might value them more than you would think when you look at the way that they played. I think they'd love to have those two back. And then you need you're looking at what to do with the one. I'm with you. I think if you look at their history and the way they have talked and constantly viewed the tight end position and paying it in particular, I know everybody loves names like Noah Fant and some of the other big names out there. And Noah Fant of anyone would make the most sense if you were going to do it, because he is young. He does appear to be kind of an ascending player, figuring it out a little bit. You could see that. I just don't see them making an investment. And I think he'll have a market. So I don't see them paying for tight end yet. Maybe that's one of the surprises. Maybe that's the thing we learn about them this year. But I don't get that impression. I think you're looking at more of, hey, this has worked. Regurgitating the one-year plan for the most part. Even when it didn't work, they made it work last year. So I think that's kind of the idea. And that's why Hayden would be a person that would make sense. But I think there's a number of paths that you could go down. I do think they draft one at some point. And whoever that is. There's a bunch of different paths, I think, at tight end that you could end up in right now. I would be surprised if it was a big investment, though, just because of the way they talk about and view and the needs that they have in terms of where they need to spend to see it go early on to a tight end would surprise me. Hey, but congrats to Hayden Hurst on $13 million. It worked out for him, so I'm sure he doesn't hate it, but I think it's a little bit of a message to – free agents, hey, don't leave Joe Burrow. Like, hang around with Joe Burrow, and your profile and your stats and everything will be pretty solid. And I think your bank account might be too. Although, you know, CJ and Hayden cash in. Other tag, yesterday was the end of the tag deadline. Of course, the Bengals wasted no time, so they weren't really part of it. So if there's ripple effects on it, Michael Pittman also tagged. I think there was a view of what's going to happen to the receiver market with Pittman and with Higgins. Neither able to get deals done. We knew the Bengals really weren't going to, but Pittman, they tried and couldn't either. I think that just shows how wild the receiver market is right now. just because you have so many guys that need to be paid. Everyone wants to wait and see where it goes. No one wants to go in early and be the one that then everybody jumps over top of. So I think free agency is going to be really fascinating there, but there's, you know, there's not a lot of guys. I mean, Pittman and Higgins were really the top of the receiver market. You had the Mike Evans deal, but he's different because he's older and he re-signed. He's very incentive laden. It's going to be hard to get a handle on it. You're probably going to have to wait until extension season to really understand where it's going to land in terms of what Higgins' eventual big deal somewhere ends, and obviously Jamar at the end of that rainbow.
Yeah, and how long does this continue? Does this go into next offseason the same way? Where, I mean, are we still talking about Justin Jefferson not having his deal and Jamar wanting to wait him out? And there's so many good ones available in the draft, and it is not a great free agent class, and it almost feels like it's on Jefferson to go first, but he's like anyone else. He don't want to be jumped, and I don't know if anybody would jump him because he's got the numbers and the production to do it. But it's interesting to think about what would happen. Would Jamar be a fifth year option guy, or actually play on the fifth year option? Are they going to kick that can down the road for the big extension?
Yeah. I mean, more than likely it would seem he's going to be if we're trying to predict the date today, September 5th, 2025. There we go. That's my
They're boarding the plane to the
That's my Jamar Chase extension. That's my Jamar boarding the plane. What are you talking about, Jay? They're gonna be coming off a Super Bowl. They're gonna be hosting the Thursday night game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, wait, people are like, Paul, don't you do it to us again with that Super Bowl prediction stuff. Okay. You ruined last year. I'm still getting blamed for that. Yes, that's my prediction. September 3rd, 2025 on the Jamar Chase extension date. That's my date. Mark it down. Oh, we don't have a producer. I'm looking to a producer. That's me. Okay. So that's that. The Mixon decision looms. You know, I think that is maybe as we speak in the process of being hashed out. I've sort of talked about how, you know, yeah, you've read it, you've written it. We all know what it is. It doesn't make a ton of sense why they wouldn't do it, but it's got to get talked out. And until that word comes down, I think it's in question. And so, but I think it now is the time. I mean, this is Friday before free agency. It's really the Black Friday for players often, where you just see so many of those last cuts come down. So you would think maybe this week we would hear about it. But again, that bonus, $3 million roster bonus deadline is not until the fourth day of the league year, March 17th. They don't have to do it until then, but once you've made the decision, what are you waiting for? I think is kind of the idea. If they do though, you know, then they're in the running back market. And so maybe they would want to see what happens with the early portions of, there are so many running backs available. Yes. It is unbelievable. I mean, there are just so many running backs available right now. It is just flooded. So there's lots of options to go through, and we'll see if that makes it stagnant early on or not.
And that's why it makes the decision, the timing of the decision, because you would think the contingency needs to be there. Can they get a guy in free agency? But like you said, there's so many out there. They have to figure that they're going to be able to get at least one. If that's all, maybe they want two. Would that be the wise thing to do, to actually have someone in the fold before pulling the trigger on Mixon?
Yeah. Okay. Let's play a game. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Today's game is who can hit the most external free agents signed in the next 2 weeks. Okay. So let's sit between this episode and then the one that will be on, what will that be? March 20th, Wednesday, March 20th. We'll get all the way through next week. We'll each pick five, okay? You have to have a defensive tackle, an offensive tackle, and three others. Any position you want. You could do another defensive tackle, an offensive tackle if you want. And let's do, how about 2 points for a defensive tackle or offensive tackle and 1 point for all the others? Does that sound fair?
It does.
How about this? I got it even better. 2 points for defensive tackle, offensive tackle. You decide 2 points on one of your three wild cards that you feel best about as a confidence pool. Ooh, balloons. Why are there balloons? Balloons just showed up. those of you listening at home are like, what? Sorry, the stream just popped balloons up for me for some reason. 2 points for one of your wild cards and then 1 point for your other two. You dictate which. Confidence pool style. Does all of this appeal to your – I mean, you put together a lot of complicated pools and spreads and things like this. It's March Madness season. You've got like 10 different brackets you're going to be running. Does that feel complicated enough for you, Jay?
So two for defensive tackle, offensive tackle, and then on the wild cards, we can pick which of the wild cards is a two.
Yeah, and then the other two are ones.
Okay. And I actually only have four guys here, so I got to come up with another fifth
one. You can come up with another. You just posted a whole story.
Yeah, you're right.
You've got plenty.
Nobody liked it. Nobody liked it. They told me I was wrong and terrible.
They like it, Jay. Look, let's talk to the people that don't like us. Pass. All right? We're not here for them. It doesn't matter to the people that didn't like it. All right? We like it. All right. So let's play this game. You want to start? I'll let you start. You can even take first pick here and decide who it is that you want.
All right. I'm trying to decide if I want to make this my wild card double.
Going to open with the wild card double, huh?
I think I will. I'm going to go safety Jordan Whitehead. Now, that is not who I had in my article. Okay. But, you know, from talking at the combine, and it sounds like they are interested in bringing a veteran in. Whitehead's a guy. He played last year on a $5.3 million contract. Is he going to get more this year? Maybe. Who knows? He's a six-year vet. He's got 89 career starts. He won a ring with Tampa Bay as a box safety, had a career-high 10 tackles for loss that year, comes to the Jets, switches to a free safety, a back end. Career highs last year, 4 picks. 9 passes defended, 97 tackles. He's a guy that can do it all. He's seen a lot with the 89 starts. He's the kind of – he's still young enough to be back to be in their range where they like to sign these guys. I think he fits everything, experience, price. I don't know what the market's going to be. It seems odd that someone with that pedigree – only signed a one-year $5.3 million contract last year, but you roll that into this year, even if it goes up a little bit. We know the Bengals don't value safeties, but that hits right kind of in the range where they would be looking if they want to add a piece to that position. I think he'd be a really good fit.
No, I mean, it makes sense. And, you know, that's one of the things that I sort of broke down when looking at all the last 4 years and how they've spent. They spend now. They're fun now. Fun Bengals. Fun March Bengals. It's great. This used to be nap season for me, although I do miss nap season.
Yes.
But it's not now. But now we've seen it enough. I think we know what the fun Bengals do. Okay? I mean, you look at the only people, like everybody, and this is part of when we start picking, you just – can't give them anyone who's 30. We keep saying it. It's just proven. Now you have 4 years of anybody they have signed with a thought that they're coming in to start the next year or be a major role player. Only Riley Reiff on the in a lurch last second, need a right tackle for 2021 was over 30 at the time of signing. That's it. You know how many people that wipes off of our board when you start talking about safeties? And I know I've talked about Harrison Smith. I feel like he could be a rare exception just due to the intelligence that they think that he has as a player. He is under contract. I'm not going to go down that road right now. But you got to look for guys. The average price of the non-offensive lineman, because some of those guys have been a little bit older, the average age is 26.5. I mean, and all of those guys, the best cases have been young guys. I mean, that's who they've been, and middle tier guys. That the only time they've gone up to the top is value. Trey Hendrickson, Orlando Brown were values, even though that you were paying a lot more. They were at the, that's just what it costs. You know, the cost of doing business in the starting edge and starting left tackle market is expensive, but they were relative values. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get into bidding wars. You know, DJ Reader might be your only example, but they were much more desperate in 2020 than they are now. So with those parameters set, that's why I, you know, Whitehead makes sense exactly like you said. If they're going to go into safety, that's the type of player I would see them looking for. I'm going to go for another two-pointer since you showed your hand at safety. I'm not going to go for my safety that I feel good about. I'm going Tyre Tarte from Tennessee / Houston last year was let go. The defensive tackle market is full of olds now. Not us olds, we're old, but football olds, Bengals free agent olds. So many of the players people like are 29, 30 years old that they're just not typically and would be a little bit more expensive. Places that they just have not gone. They like to go mid-tier ascending player coming off his rookie contract. Hello, Tyre Tarte, one of the few. They put in a claim for him last year. When he was, they wanted three teams to try to claim him when Tennessee let him go. They always, I remember how many conversations when the Titans became somehow part of the AFC North, I guess, when we've gone to Nashville every year. It's great for us. It's like every time you talk about their line, how stout it is, Jeffrey Simmons, and then someone would inevitably always say, man, Tart's really good too. Mm-hmm. It was, I felt like it always was part of the conversation. That so all of that together, just turned 27. He's not going to be insanely expensive. I think he'll fall in that $7 to $10 million range. That's sort of the middle section that they've lived in per year. You could get him for 3 years. He comes in, he plays as a next to BJ Hill, gives you some versatility in there. Tyre Tarte, I think he's the most likely for me to get 2 points on. So I'm gonna go him my first pick.
Yeah, I love that pick. And you're talking about the age thing, and I'm thinking, well, I've got two guys on my list that are over 30, but it's just a different, you never know when that cliff's going to come. And we're not talking about the 2018 signings of Geno and Carlos, which were what, 3 and 4 year deals. These would be more stopgap kind of measures. And that's why one of the guys I had on my story yesterday, and I'll go with him here, is my defensive tackle pick, Daquan Jones from Buffalo. He's been around the league for a long time. He's going to be 32, but he was the seventh highest graded run stuffer as defensive tackle by PFF last year. And obviously PFF grades aren't everything, but you're not a stiff. If they've got you up there that high with as many good defensive tackles are in the league, he performed. He's almost never been hurt. Now, he did miss 10 games last year, but there was a pec injury. He fought his way back. He played the two final regular season games. He played the two playoff games. Yes, they want to get more push in there, but if DJ Reader, if they can't get him back, they need that big, wide-bodied run stuffer in there. And Daquan Jones could give them that. And, you know, you're talking about what we talked about last week with the new enthusiasm, optimism for Joseph Osai. He's a guy that can move inside on third down as a three tech. Sam Hubbard could possibly move inside. BJ Hill is still there. I think you've got enough guys that can kind of handle that rotation as the pass rusher guy. They need the big run stuffer guy in this division. And you're a little concerned about his age, but I don't think he'd be super expensive. He knows he's at the end of his road. He was a 2014 pick. He was taken one pick after Russell Bodine. The Bengals took Bodine, and then the Bills took or the Titans took Daquan right after that. So, you know, a chance to chase a ring. These guys know when it's getting down to the end. He's never had one. He's played in one AFC championship game in his career. And I just think he's a guy that could get affordable and give them what they need as a run stuffer in the middle.
You're trying to send Bengals fans to the dark place on a March Wednesday, Jay. Mentioned Russell Bodine. All right. don't take us back to that stream. You thought we talked about Joe Mixon and T. Higgins a lot. Don't take me back to the Russell Bodine days where every week on Bengals Beat podcast, we had to discuss Bodine angst. I'm taking me to the dark place.
The best part about Bodine was, it was one of my favorite quotes of all time since governing his team, is when Paul Alexander said, I judge a guy how good he is by when I shake his hand, whether he could kick my ass or not.
Yeah. That was the good old days where I could literally tell you who the Bengals are going to draft at interior offensive lineman by the highest bench press reps. It was like it was like every single year they loved that. They loved that. So yeah, that's great. Defensive tackle, though, just to kind of piggyback one, want to finish that conversation. I think that's the thing that they're most worried about, because it's just not a good market. It's because of, at least for what they're looking for, the types of players that they want and the type of difference makers they want, it, none of it seems to fit to what they are, who they are, and how they like, they want to build the roster. So it forces them to either A, do something uncomfortable, like you mentioned, or B, do something creative. Also, the draft is not, this isn't, if there were the amount of defense, interior defensive tackles that there are instead of offensive tackles, your whole philosophy might switch, but there's not. The chances of what Dane Brugler had in his latest mock draft of Byron Murphy being there, I think that's kind of almost like a dream scenario, aren't necessarily great. Maybe they sell themselves on one of the other guys, but there's no telling that you're going to get a true difference maker. You're going to be in that second, third round guy who you don't want to have to rely on to take DJ Reader's place. That could send them to a place of trying to find the common ground with DJ Reader, doing something that is, maybe that's where the surprise, I feel like that's where the surprise lies this year, because they're in a real tough spot that requires them to go outside of their standard places, I think, to truly make an impact at their number one priority spot. So I think that's where, if there's a surprise, it comes from, whatever that means, creativity and trade, signing, type of player, overextending. I think that's where it has to come from, because the regular methods are a little convoluted and not filled with the type of guys that they necessarily want. All right, my pick. I'm going to go for another two-pointer. I'm going to go offensive tackle, and I'm going to bang the Mekhi Becton drum one more time. I just really believe that they are taking the one-and-one approach of the middle, more than serviceable right tackle starter that they know. They know his personality. Frank Pollock is, in this theory, very comfortable with. I got that impression from him at the combine, who then can be there. And if he starts, you're great. And all of those offensive tackles you saw running around the combine looking crazy athletic, wondering if Amarius Mims is in fact an alien or from this world, and the way his size and the way he moves, or all of the tackles that could be there that seem to fit the type of players that they want. It really feels like Becton and number 18 wraps up your offensive line, and you really like where you're at there. It could be another, there's others. I mean, there's certainly others in that mix that could be your bridge 1 to 2 year tackle, though there are others. But if I'm looking for most likely, and I'm trying to get my 2 points to stick it to Jay, I'm going with Becton as my pick.
Yeah, I love that pick. The things, he's got the injury history, which I think is a concern, and I don't know where his market's going to be. I think he's a guy that, I mean, it's so hard to find tackles in the league right now, and he is a guy that where the bidding can just kind of go up and up because of his age, and that's why I went the other way, same position, but I went with Trent Brown. He's been around, he's got all kinds of experience in this league. He's got a reputation for being a little mercurial, but he's played for Shanahan. He's played for Belichick. Those guys don't suffer fools. I feel like he would be a really good pick, because everybody looks at, well, they've got a huge hole at right tackle, because everybody knows Jonah's leaving. But they have a huge hole at swing tackle too. There's nobody on this roster right now that you feel good about that stepping in and being that swing guy this year. And so I'm of the same mindset you are that it's going to be a veteran right tackle in free agency. And then 18 is a really good chance to add another tackle. I like Trenton Brown. I know he's going to be 31 this year. That's again, wrong side of the equation, but he's a guy that he's got a Super Bowl ring. He's got all this experience. He just would seem like an ideal fit to either be a bridge tackle if the guy they draft isn't ready, or be a quality depth piece. I mean, what are the chances they're going to get all five starters starting all 17 games again next year? I mean, it's never happened in Bengals history because it's the 17 game season's new, but there's only one other time in Bengals history where they had all five start every game. That was in 1985. You just can't count on that. And you gotta, depth is so much a part of what they need to do to fortify this line. And it does give me pause his age, but I think he would be a much more affordable and a much more, maybe the high side isn't there with a Becton, but if you're going to take a guy in the first round anyhow, you're looking at him as your long-term guy, and it would be better to go with the more affordable, more consistent guy in Trenton Brown.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I think it's the same philosophy, and there's mm-hmm. different pieces there. I mean, I think we could talk about Tyron Smith and, you know, what would happen, you know. He's a left tackle, but man, he could do both. Brown could do both. We know that. I mean, I know Brown very much cares about being the left tackle. And does Tyron Smith care about that? Does he want to chase a ring? Does he care about going to the right side? Does he knows Frank Pollock. He's kind of the older, the higher risk, higher reward version of Becton, I think, because of his injury history, and he just really struggled to be healthy lately, and he is older. But man, if you got a full season of Tyron Smith, you are in heaven up front. So it's a risky swing if you have that, but you know, he would be kind of that other side of the coin when you're talking about the bridge option. There's other bridge options. You mentioned Brown, Jermaine Illuminor. We know some of these names of guys that will be in that middle tier that you could come in and play that game with. So I think all of those are in that mix. But yeah, I think we'll see where that lands. Okay. So my pick again, all right, I'm going to go with my other number two wild card, and I'm going to do it the same way you did, thinking it does end up being a veteran safety, and I'm going Geno Stone. I just, there's certain things that I have a hard time getting out of my head. It's a problem. Okay, I'm working on it. Lots of people I talk to try to help me with this. I fixate. And knowing this team, knowing what they want, I just cannot get over the fact that he outfoxed Joe Burrow in week two. And they know it. And then he had all those interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote this today because, you know, Geno Stone, not Geno Smith. That'd be quite a surprise. Geno Stone, he's not even 25 yet. You know who he reminds me of, and this is Trey Hendrickson. Let me tell you why. Didn't get a ton of run, was always kind of behind other guys, but every time he did play, like, man, that guy's got something there. Then finally in his last year, really showed what he could do and proved it with more snaps. Geno Snow did that last year on a defense that was great. And in division, obviously they think he's incredibly intelligent for what he did to Burrow, and they've seen him up close. They've studied him now for a number of years. You're 3 years, $20 million, ascending mid-tier, young. He checks all of those boxes. And then hits them at what they want. They want more savvy, veteran, intelligent play back there that they felt like was missing and causing a lot of those explosives. Now, you're getting him at a discount because he has the tackling concerns. He's missed a ton of tackles, and you maybe they're willing to deal with that. You're having people getting Nick Scott flashbacks. That was such an issue. So maybe that ends up being a cross through his name. But I'm willing to say from every other box that's there and how he fits the profile that Geno Stone would make sense. And so if I, maybe that's my bet I'm putting down on my wild card 2-pointer.
I like him a lot. And I liked Alohi Gilman from the Chargers. And you mentioned the flashbacks from Nick Scott is kind of the same way where it's the same, but different is Trey Hendrickson, where they have that 1 year where they explode and are really good. And that leads to the free agency. But both of those guys, Gilman and Stone, were like Nick Scott, where they were just kind of special teams role guys. And then they get the 1 year as a starter. And if they're looking for a veteran back there to lead the communications and all that, are they going to be okay with just a 1 year starter? Are they going to want somebody that's done it a lot longer term? That's why I went Whitehead on that. But I love everything about Geno Stone, other than the fact maybe the experience isn't there, but maybe you get him cheaper because of that. I'm going to stick with a Raven. I'm going to go J.K. Dobbins. And okay. I think they talk about explosion. And that guy, since 2020, he has a higher percentage of explosive runs than every back in the league. This is just guys with at least 100 carries. Every back in the league except for Devin Achane from the Dolphins.
Yeah.
The obvious issue is health. He's been hurt a lot. He's played, 9 games in the last 3 years. So that's the big concern, but that's a reason you can probably get him cheap and a reason that you can maybe double down at that position. And you're talking about you get Dobbins and another free agent and what Chase Brown's making this year, and you've got a three-headed monster with a lot of explosion, and it's going to cost you about half of what Joe Mixon would cost. And we know Mike likes his Ohio State guys, and there's just a lot. It's a low-risk, high-reward situation with a guy like Dobbins.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, it's a feeling of, okay, we're also half betting on Mixon being let go and them feeling like they need to find a cheaper but more explosive running back to fit into his place. And again, theme of the combine, probably theme of the offseason. Stop the explosives, create more explosives. And so I'm with you. I think that's a key place to look. There's a grouping of a couple that I think fit, which would be considered running back. There's so many safeties. Mm-hmm. There's so many tight ends. There's so many running backs, which tells you how the league feels about those positions. There's so many options that are out there right now that you can choose from. A few stand out to me that I think would fit. I think Devin Singletary would fit. I think there's an interesting question that you're looking at if you do move on from Mixon is, do you still need another big back? He's their power back. Chase Brown is your much faster, quicker. Do you want to replace him with somebody who could be more of a goal line power type player? Or do you feel like you don't necessarily need that? You can, today's game, the way they play, you don't need to have a 230-pound bruiser. You can just take one of these, you know, fast guys with a little bit of bulk that can break a tackle and get through it. I think they can go without the big back, but I do think that's an interesting conversation that they're going to have. And so maybe that brings in one of the other bigger guys. AJ Dillon's out there. He's your big back prototype that's available right now from Green Bay, who has kind of, you know, played two different roles. But my pick is Zach Moss. I've liked him since the very beginning. I think looking at whether it's yards over expectation, breakaway percentage, man, he has been a complimentary piece in multiple places now. And when Jonathan Taylor went down last year, he was great. He was really good for Indianapolis to the point where you're like, man, I can't believe they signed Jonathan Taylor. Look what Zach Moss is doing. But I think that was partially a credit to what Zach Moss can be as a really nice complimentary piece, an explosive player that gets you yards over expected, makes guys miss on the second level, gets you breakaway stuff, explosive, explosive, explosive. Much more of that and better hand, you know, to catch out of the backfield, turn the check down into a weapon. To me, and he's going to be half, you know, he's not going to be that expensive. Where he goes price wise, who knows? 3 to 5 million per year. Probably I think you're probably looking at. So for that reason, I think Moss hits it. But there's a number of different guys, a number of different places you could go. Those are some ones that stand out to me.
Yeah, and I'm going to stick at that position for my last one and go Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The connection with Burrow, he's got two rings now. Is he going to be looking for more of a lead back or more of a snap increase? Would he be content to stay in the same role? You know, he was part of a three-headed monster in Kansas City and didn't get used a lot. But I think he's a guy that you could get that would be affordable. And again, that someone that you know that Burrow trusts and has worked with and can be explosive out of the backfield as a pass catcher. His runs, his yards per carry really dipped last year. But if he's more of your third down back or just mixing him in there with another free agent and then with Chase Brown, I think he would be an intriguing cheap option.
Yeah, I mean, CEH certainly makes sense as a third down back with Burrow's confidence. You know, loved throwing to him at LSU, felt like they had a really good connection on the field, especially in the check down game. He's obviously a special athlete. He showed a little bit of juice when he played last year. I've been kind of banging the CEH drum for a while as a third down back, as the new Samaje. So I agree with you. I'll say Hayden Hurst. I'll just do it. You know, it just feels like he fits right in with what they're looking for at the tight end spot. And I know we talked about him earlier, but I think there's that reunion has a chance. I think that reunion has a chance. So feeling burnt by not, you know, realizing how important it is to know the guy has rapport with Burrow rather than having to create it on the fly, I think is maybe such a fresh scar from last year that it does lean you towards Hayden and you know, Hayden's going to want to be here. So, you know, one side is tangoing and the other side has reason to tango, is staring at the dance floor. Hey, I like your tango. Maybe I'll come tango too, you know? And so I feel like there's a chance for two to tango enough that I'm going to try to get my 1 point off of that. So, all right. The board is set, Jay. I don't know that we have any stakes set yet, but we can figure out what those would be at another time. See where it lands. Yeah, unless you had something in mind, unless you had an embarrassment bet that you're ready for, forced singing on the podcast or something.
No, well, I mean, we can just, I don't know. Well, I don't want to roll it into the growler, but we'll come up with something.
Yeah, don't worry.
I was going to log it in a spreadsheet and we'll keep track as these guys sign.
You're obviously logging it into a spreadsheet, Jay. Like, let's just...
I'm doing it as you talk. I'm typing him in right now.
Yeah, I didn't know why. I was writing him down in front of me like I needed to. Like, I didn't already have a spreadsheet with algorithms set up. Okay. All right, that was fun. Fun exercise. Let's flip it forward now. And let's go... Jay's got stats time, right? Let's do a little Jay's got stats. What do you got for me today?
So just as we just did, everybody focuses on free agency and the decisions on who to sign. And equally as big is obviously who do you let walk? And I think a lot of Bengals fans are still stung by 2017 when the Bengals let Whitworth and Zeitler walk. Since then, they are almost undefeated in making these decisions. So there's 25 guys that were free agents that they let that signed with other teams before the draft. So I'm not talking about these August signings and that kind of thing. So 25 guys, 12 of them signed multi-year deals. 8 were cut or traded before that deal expired. And 3 of them are still TBA. You got Jesse Bates with 3 years left on his deal, Von Bell with 2 years left on his deal, Samaje Perine left with 1 on his deal. The only guy that left the Bengals between 2018 and now that signed a multi-year deal that played it out was Carl Lawson. And his 3-year deal, he played 23 games, had 38 tackles and 7 sacks, and it cost the Jets $45 million to get him. The other guys, the 12 multi-years, there were 13 1-year guys that left the Bengals, went and just signed a quick 1-year deal. 9 of them were cut before the season or before the end of that one season. The 4 that played it out, I don't think anybody's going to cry about these guys walking away when they did. AJ Green, Mackenzie Alexander, Cedric Obuehi, and Jeremy Hill. So the Bengals have made really good decisions on who they let go. And it's interesting because of those 25, 10 of them came in 1 year. In 2021, just months before they made the Super Bowl run, they let 10 guys walk. And that churned over the roster, and they made the great picks in the draft. They made the great, well, I don't know. They made the great picks in free agency. They had a decent enough draft. And here we are. They have turned this team over because they've kind of gotten away from the mid 2010s where it was all at Marvin every year. We're going to sign our guys. We like our guys. We're going to bring our guys back. And they've made the right calls on the guys they let walk.
And, you know, you look back at the one thing about free agency has been so much a part of sort of the soul in a lot of ways of this renaissance because of the moves that they've been able to make. And last year was the first time they had a little bit of a hiccup. Mm-hmm. I mean, but again, it was because of the way they kind of got what they paid for. You know, I feel like they mostly got what they paid for in Orlando Brown. They probably would, both sides would like for it to have been better, but they didn't pay him to be a top 5 tackle. And he wasn't. And maybe he'll play that out and be more of that as it goes. But, you know, they didn't pay much for Nick Scott. They didn't pay much for Irv Smith. They stayed out of that. But the deals that they have made, the people that they mostly have paid, have mostly worked out. And they need those decisions to return again this year. And that's probably by making a proper investment, not going bottom of the barrel at some of these positions necessarily. And so that's to me going to be an important part of what happens next week, is not waiting for the fourth wave. It's like, keep, know your sweet spot, live that sweet spot, hit, rock that middle class. That's been such a part of what they've done well. And when you're going to go big, find where the value is and not get into the bidding wars. That strategy has worked. It's helped build this roster. It's usually the way they go. And so we'll see if that's how it plays out again. All right. Great. Jay's got stats there. All right. Growler bet time. We're going to go a little growler bet here. We have the one last week already holding now with the day that DJ Reader signs. And so we'll have that. Let's see. What do you got, Jay? What's our growler bet here this week?
So this can be an outside free agent or a Bengals re-signing, a free agent that they re-sign. But what will be the combined AAV, average annual value, of the 5 most expensive contracts they dole out in free agency? The Bengals have 16 of their own free agents. Maybe they go out and sign 4, 5, 6 outside guys, but only the top 5 count. So what will be the total amount paid to those top 5 guys in terms of annual average value?
Are we going, what
it's hard one, to do on the fly.
I one mine out. Decimal? Are we doing one?
Yeah, decimal? One down to one decimal.
We're not out here to give out free beer yet.
That's right.
Okay. This we're trying. Look, we gotta hold our money in a bucket right now. Okay, we're just getting started with this thing. We can't be giving out free beer just yet. So, all right. Let me, you do yours first while I kind of get my number down exactly to where I want to go.
All right. So now I think I said it wrong as I was, because when I did my math, I was looking at just the Bengals 16 free agents, the 5 most expensive, whether they sign here or elsewhere. So,
okay. So not who the Bengals sign.
Right. The Bengals current
former Bengals signing elsewhere.
So if Jonah goes somewhere for $15 million, that's 15 and then whatever. So sorry for the misdirection there. I had written it down wrong from where I had it here.
Got it.
So I went 27.7 million with Jonah being the high end on that of the 16 Bengals current free agents. He'll get the highest amount, average annual value of that group. And total, because I don't know a lot. There's going to be a lot after that that they're going to get big deals. So that's where I'm landed at, 27.7 million per year.
Okay. You know, I think, you know, if Jonah ends up around, let's say 15, 14, Cheeto around, let's say 10, 8. Mm. All right. You're going to have, that's what we're at, let's say 23, Tyler Boyd for 8. I'm up to 31. Ooh. DJ Reader for, that's a hard one.
There's another caveat. Guys that signed before the start of the draft.
Just keep throwing this stuff in here, Jay. Before the start of the draft. Okay. Okay. 31. I'll go up to, I'm going to say 42.
Okay. The reason I did that is because DJ, this could drag out forever. And I wanted to have a quicker answer because we already got the DJ one, which could go further. Yeah.
42.1. I'm changing it. 42.1. Okay. Make sure you get that 0.1. It's going to save me.
I had Boyd as a part. I didn't think he would go for 8 a year. Don't think he'll go for 8 a year. And I had Cheeto much lower too. And I even had Jonah a tick below that 15 range. I had him more in the 12, 13 range. But
I'm trying to bake in, you know, the extra money that is out there a little bit. Mm-hmm. That could send some of these prices higher than you would expect. And you know, I think the Bengal factor is a thing too. I mean, people would have some value on guys that came from a place that won and that have some history in the postseason that could drive them up a little bit. All right, and we'll see. That's a good gap for us to see.
It is. It's huge.
See where it lands. I'm curious to see which philosophy plays out. All right, another addition to the Growler Bet. And again, send your submissions, pdaner@theathletic.com, the word growler in the subject line. Of course, you can always hashtag Bengals Growler Bet to us on Twitter. And some free beer can be yours at whatever location we do our next live show. We don't know where that's going to be yet. Could be anywhere, Jay. Anybody that wants us to come and do a live show, we're open. We're open to wherever you want us to come and do some live shows. We're interested in bringing our crowd to whoever that is, and we'll pay some tabs here to for our good winners. And we still owe some people. I owe some people from last season. This isn't on you, Jay.
Okay.
Some things went awry in the last season of the Growler Bet. So I owe some people. So that'll be part of the next package too. So we'll get to all that. All right. Let's wrap it up with a little Arby's time. You know, I didn't give the last Arby's what it fully deserved, Jay.
Yeah, we kind of cut quick.
I had to cut quick, and people might even wonder what the heck happened there. I like the Arby's, how they just play out a little bit. I was recording, we were recording it live and finishing right as all of a sudden my phone started ringing. I forgot that I had to do ESPN 1530 with our guy, Chad Brendel, and the phone was ringing as we were talking, and I was like, oh my gosh, we have to finish. I have to get up. They're actually live right now, and we were trying to finish live, and the whole thing ran late. So that's what happened last time, but we'll let it go this time. So some favorites from reactions to the pod being released. This has got to be a boon for the Arby's economy, Jay. I got to feel like the amount of people who are like, I'm having a roast beef sandwich in the honor of this show being back. This is the effect that you're having on people. You're making people go and get in line. I mean, look, alert the Arby's marketing folks again. Put on your meat sweats that they sent to you and recognize what you're doing for this company.
I may have screwed myself because I a couple days ago I went to Arby's and I was in line. I was like, oh, there's only one person in line, and it was taking forever. And I mean the car started backing up behind me, and I seriously considered just going somewhere else and pulling out of line. And I guess this guy had a huge order, and then once he took off, I got my food. But yeah, I love it to have people go and experience the greatness that is Arby's, but don't go to the one in Fairfield. Don't make my line longer.
Man, it's too big. The business is too big, man. Shout out to the Fairfield Arby's, Jay's Arby's, home games.
I used to work there.
Is it better? Are you more used to it and comfortable with your home Arby's, or do you feel like it actually is the same everywhere?
It's consistent everywhere, but that one is the closest to my house and it is the one I used to work at. So I just got a little soft spot for that.
Can you tell when some young Jay Morrisons are working back there and you're not so sure about the way things are being put together?
No, I think some changes were made after I left.
I also appreciated people pointing out this is just in time for the premiere of Survivor 46.
Yes.
Which it is. So Survivor Talk is here. I appreciate the guy who got eliminated in the first episode goes down as the worst first episode yes. contestant in the history of Survivor. Has anyone made more mistakes in the premiere episode? Usually you feel bad, like, oh man, you're there for your dream and you just like bad luck happens where it's the first episode. Things go sideways. And it's kind of out of your control who gets eliminated first. I think at one point they were going to do a whole season of people that got eliminated first because it is generally very bad luck. Never has it been so clear that this is the worst player there's ever been early in the game between just quitting multiple times, being totally unaware, getting your hair braided when everyone wants to eliminate you and taking a nap in the shelter when everyone else is like trying to find you lose your vote. You couldn't even have a shot in the dark because you lost your vote quitting on a game at the island out there. It's just, and then goes out and what a blindside. I never saw it coming thinking he was, I was a big fan of that worst first episode ever.
And Jelinski, I mean, calling himself a legend and on multiple occasions in his confessionals, normally you feel really bad about the first boot and my wife, Nikki, and I were both like, yes, and we wanted to see that guy go. Cause the cast is very likable this year after one episode, but yeah, I was glad to see him out.
Love that. So shout out to everybody that gets their Survivor Talk back again. You're welcome. We're back, baby. We're all the way back. All right. What do you got for Arby's?
Well, same thing, a reaction to, the pod coming back. And, my daughter texted me this morning and said that a guy where she works at Garfield Middle School told her today that he is now at peace because Jay and Paul are back together.
Oh,
and she
wow.
said she had no idea that we were even, I didn't tell her. She doesn't live with us anymore. She's got her own place. And I didn't
Big
tell
fan
her.
Of the program, huh?
Yeah, obviously. But a shout out to James Williams, the eighth grade history teacher at Garfield Middle School for coming to peace with us being back doing this show.
World peace, one person at a time, Jay. That's us. That's it. We're fixing all of the world's problems. What else you got?
I think, us being back together, and this is one of the ones we were going to get to last week, but now we can get to it, is we can team up on the evil-minded James Rapine, who really did something he shouldn't have done at the Combine. I was having a nice quiet night. I had two beers at dinner. I sat with you guys for a few hours and just kind of nursed one beer. I was ready to get some good sleep. And he was insistent on buying me a beer and I just kept refusing and said I wouldn't do it. So at last call, he orders a round of Jaeger shots. And
come on, James.
Not what anybody needed. And then Butch Hobson ran out of there.
Was so forceful in us doing them. It wasn't like, oh, it's okay. No, it was very unnecessarily forceful.
And Hobson was a smart one. He ran out, said no way. So I ended up doing two. and I would like to know if there was cameras because I've been around enough. I've seen people do Jaeger at close to last call and it's a quick decline. And James didn't seem affected at all. And he'd had some beers. I think he might have dumped his on the floor and then pretended to do it because it did not affect him at all. And he's fit. He doesn't have a lot of body fat to absorb that kind of alcohol. And I was stunned that he didn't go downhill fast.
Well, I'm happy that I was there to confirm your anecdotal research on it creates a quick decline. Because
I wasn't going to say it, but
no, it's, I mean, I don't do, you're the Jaeger guy. I don't do that. Like, that's why I was so appalled by the order in the first place and to be forced to do it. And that it was really unnecessary. I have seen a video. James took a video of me talking to him, to where which I ended with a line that is true. And that is, you deserve every check that you get when they bring it over to the table. I don't know. I didn't know what it cost or what he bought or who's paying for what, but he deserves all the checks for putting me in that place. Cause that was totally unnecessary, James. And I hope.
Yeah.
All right. All right, Jay. Free agency next week. So we'll be kind of on the fly trying to react as it goes. We'll have the first couple of days in the book. So we'll try to get you something that comes out as timely as it can. There's no timeliness in podcasts and free agency. It's a lot of live reactions, very walkouty. So we'll have something for you, kind of reacting to the first couple of days of free agency next week, and see where we're at. A lot will happen, so make sure you stay along. Make sure you are subscribed to the Growler wherever you get your podcasts, or watching on YouTube if you want to check us out on there. And hit us up if you have any questions, things you want. Make sure you send in your questions for myself and Mark Shalafo on the Friday show. Who they light. Your questions drive our direction. So we'll see wherever it goes. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.